2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right, welcome back to the third edition of the Baseball America Fantasy Summit. I am your host, Jeff Ponce. Of course, alongside me, as always, is my co-host, Dylan White, our lead fantasy analyst. This week is a big show. We have two guests. Last week, we had James Anderson on. This week, we have two more of our good friends in the industry. Of course, Eric Cross of FTN Fantasy, as well as Rotoballer, and Jesse Roach of Baseball Prospectus. So some very seasoned veteran rankers here, drafters, fantasy players across a bunch of different formats. They also happen to be partaking in our annual Baseball America Magazine mock draft, where it is a 12-team, 30-round startup with at least five prospects, sort of based on a 5x5 roto scoring, where we swap OBP for average. But how are you guys today? How's it going, Eric? How you been?
Doing well, man. Doing well. You know, it's great to have, you know, baseball back in full swing, you know, college back up, pitchers and catches are reported. It's a fun time of year. You know, it's like no more, you know, there's that no more lull until, you know, November. We got baseball every day for the next 9-10 months, whatever it is. So this is my favorite time of year. It really is. It's like Christmas.
Yeah, very exciting. How about you, Jesse? I know you're a big college baseball fan, so you must be figuring out how you can get some work done while also watching games throughout the day. We start very early. I know I'm going to be cheering on my good friend Brian Sikowski with Duke.
Yeah.
Big Duke guy now.
Oh, man. I really wish. If you can't tell, I'm in my bed right now. I have a young child, two children, but the youngest came in November, and I start a new job in October, so there's no time. No time. Thank you. But so you have to pick and choose your battles. So I will be leaning heavily on Baseball America and its outstanding college coverage in the upcoming season. I will try and watch as much college as I can, but I'm going to be leaning on you, Jeff, and your great team.
Yeah, you know, obviously we've had a ton of content up on the site at Baseball America. You want to dive in now and kind of get a crash course before tomorrow over the weekend. Of course, we have Teddy Cahill, you know, Peter Flaherty, Carlos Collazo doing our draft coverage, and just, you know, the team in general. We're all very much immersed in the game and what's going on. So that's exciting. Last but not least, Dylan, what's going on, man? I didn't give you any extravagant like intro this week. No, like Master the Robo Scout, none of that stuff.
Mean event winner, right?
Like, I try to like really build around that and like get really outrageous. So
people are sick of it by now. I'm just quiet. I'm in awe of Jesse able to just kind of relax in bed and just knock out a professional podcast where I'm like in a flop sweat, anxious about saying the wrong things. No, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. It was funny when you're talking to Eric just there about pitchers and catchers reporting. And I was just thinking back how 2 weeks ago we were doing our summit podcast and the Corbin Burnes trade news broke. And now today, Kyle Bradish, UCL injury, kind of the big news of the baseball world.
Yeah.
It's tough.
That was really tough. Those reports, I saw the tweet that you shared with me, obviously, Dylan, from who was it from? I'm forgetting now.
Well, Mike Petriello.
Summarizing the Baltimore beat, and it was like
rough day for Baltimore fans.
Yeah, Vaseo had, you know, an elbow issue, though he was catching and hitting. So I was like, well, it couldn't be that bad. And then you had like the Gunnar Henderson thing, which was like, all right, soft tissue injury. That's not a great way to start the season. But then it was like, bam, Kyle Bradish. And you were like, that's a big deal. John Means. I said this to Dylan off air earlier. I'm not shocked that he's kind of behind. Like, that wasn't, you know, it looked like there was a setback, obviously, in the playoffs last year, et cetera. And that's never a great way to go into your offseason. So, yeah, I wasn't shocked by that news. But the Bradish one is a big hammer, because I think with the acquisition of Burnes and the emergence in the second half of Grayson Rodriguez, you were kind of talking about a three-headed monster there of, like, three legitimate, maybe top 20 pitchers. Like, Bradish finished, what, like, 9th? 10th, 11th in WAR, depending on what you're looking at, and was obviously high in fantasy scoring as well, because this is a fantasy-based show. So, yeah, that was a big one. Any other news, Dylan? Anything else that I might have missed? Any signings? No, we still have this the reigning NL Cy Young winner just hanging out there. on February 15th.
Nothing. I saw Carlos Rodon touched 97, apparently, reported by SNY. So maybe he's back. That would be good news for, I guess, Rodon fans, of which I am one. I have him on a dynasty team. I know he's very good, except, you know, the injury risk. So it's good to see that he's healthy for baseball, not just for my team, but for baseball.
Yeah, I think there was a time where he said that his back issues are going to be something that's going to bother him the rest of his career. Granted, we've heard that about, like, by Trout. And, you know, I just think it's a scary situation with Carlos Rodon. And, of course, Kyle Bradish. I mean, that's not good. Not good at all. How far are y'all going to drop him? For dynasty purposes, obviously this is a short-term hit generally, but if it's a UCL and he does have to undergo Tommy John at some point this year, again, that's a massive jump. There is no indication that that's going to happen. That means he'd be out probably for at least a large portion of next year as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the question that Dylan and I are going to have to tackle as we update rankings. And the thing that's tough with some of these reports too, is you hear one thing, a guy does end up pitching and, you know, however that goes, or a guy does end up, you know, having surgery fairly immediately. So it's tough to, like, you know when to react necessarily sometimes. You can move a guy down, obviously, a little bit. I think ADP-wise, especially if you're talking redraft, he's obviously moving down at least 30, 40 spots minimum, I would think.
Way more.
If not.
Is my guess, yeah.
Yeah, what I the reports I saw was he had a PRP injection. He's hoping to pitch through it. He's going to be on the IL to start, but he's hoping to pitch through it and avoid surgery. I think Tanaka might have done that. not much of a track record of people successfully doing that. But
I was literally going to say the same thing, Dylan. That's we've seen this. It's easier said than done, obviously, and we want to be hopeful with, you know, a guy like, you know, Bradish, that he's going to be able to do that. But yeah, we don't really have a lot of people that have done that successfully. And that's the tough thing here. And it feels like this last year we were dealing with the Painter, you know, elbow thing. And now Bradish, it's, yeah, you know, that sucks for Baltimore. And even though I am a Red Sox fan, it, you know, Baltimore's a fun team. Obviously we know, like, so much young talent there. Like, you know, they were really good last year, and, you know, adding Burns, I'm like, all right, Baltimore's gonna be a problem if they start spending money and getting some guys in to mix in with all these young talent. And then they have this pop up, and, again, maybe he will be able to pitch through it and he'll be fine. Just a little speed bump, but yeah, definitely a big blow for them.
Absolutely. But you know what? We're here. We're going to talk about this Dynasty mock draft that we got into a little bit. All four of us are participants in this 12-team mock. Last week's guest, James Anderson, is participating as well as several other luminaries from throughout the fantasy industry. Want to kick it over to the room a little bit. We're going to talk to our guests first about, you know, your initial first couple of rounds, your build. I know Dylan has been running some of the rankings based on projections, at least for year one. And you're sort of at different points. I know that Jesse's more of a competing team, or Eric, it looks like you're more of a slow build. So I'm going to kick it over to Eric first. I want to hear a little, you know, your build, your start. I'll pull up the draft board here too, so those at home can take a look at it.
Yeah, now usually, you know, I've always said that there's three initial draft strategies: win now, win soon, win later. You know, I usually never go win later. It's usually one of the first two, but a lot of times you'll be in a draft room, and whether it's, you know, 11 other managers or 14 other whatever, a lot of people are trying to do that same strategy. So I think I usually find myself leaning more towards the win soon, where, you know, I'll still build a, you know, competitive team in year one. Like, you know, maybe it won't be a championship team, but still competitive, kind of like in Highlander. We've had 2 years of Highlander. Year one, I was, I think, 10th, 11th or something. I was kind of middle pack. Then year two, I was, you know, up at the top until my team fizzled out near the end of the season. So that's kind of where, you know, that year two and three, that's where I'm really looking to be pretty stout in. And you see, I got some guys that, again, they'll be pretty good this season, like Royce Lewis, Christian Rodriguez. But, you know, if O'Neill Cruz comes into his own, you know, this year or next year, Nolan Marte, you know, guys like that, you know, Jackson Jobe, who's going to be, you know, probably debuting later this season. Shane Boz, you know, could have a good year, but, you know, innings probably won't be there until next year, hopefully. That's kind of where I was looking to go, is, all right, you know, this team, I think, would still be, you know, competitive in the 12-teamer, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, year one. But then really, you know, if I make some right moves and the guys that I draft take that next step, like the Martes and Royce Lewis's, et cetera, I think that could be a really, really good team, you know, years two, three, and beyond, and really looking to build that contender for the long run.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you're talking about a 12-team mock draft, of course, like, it's still, like, it's shallow enough that
right.
even a team like yours, there's a lot of upside. I think, you know, a pick like Royce Lewis, obviously, projections may not necessarily show the upside that's potentially there, you know, with playing time, et cetera. Jesse, let's go over to your squad a little bit now. You were picking right after me, so there's been a few times where, like, you've definitely sniped me here in the draft. But, you know, I think you had a good balance, obviously, of some younger pieces, but upside as well. And projection-wise, I think you were third in the league behind Dylan, and then, of course, number one was Jordan Rosenblum.
Are we at all like, surprised that number one, like, number two are the moves that are wedded to projections?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it was obviously, I think, drafting out of the nine spot, it's just a generally tricky spot in redraft, in startups, and honestly redrafts, but generally in startup dynasty leagues right now this year. Obviously every year is very different, but in this year I just think it's tricky because there's, you're going to miss out on a lot of the top young talent, and you're going to have to either get a younger player that has a big risk associated with them, like I did with Yordan Alvarez, or an older player. And a lot of those older players, regardless of who they are, if even Mookie Betts, they have tons of risks still associated with them because they're in their 30s. And decline can happen any day, which is the real scary part. I mean, just remember Joey Votto. Not too long ago, he was a superstar, age 33. And then age 44, the cliff occurred. Guess who's entering his age 34 season this year is Freddie Freeman. Not that there's any indication that that's coming. And I know you drafted Freeman, Jeff, but you know, it's just scary in my mind trying to, in early in drafts, go with an older option. So in startups, I typically aim for under 30 and ideally under 27 so that even if there's a step back for that player, they're going to retain their value year to year, at least some of them, some of that value. You know, that young players, someone like Jazz Chisholm, for example, had a really bad year last year, generally, but he's still quite valuable for dynasty purposes. And that's my general take. After Yordan at one, I went with Ellie De La Cruz at two, in my second pick. And Ellie, I'm sure, is going to be one of the most divisive players this draft season in all formats, particularly in redraft. And honestly, in redraft, I'm probably not going there just because I do think there's a lot of risk this year with Ellie. In dynasty, I'm still very, very high on him. You can't teach or learn the type of skill and talent he has. It's freakish. You know, he's the fastest player in baseball, period. End of story. And, you know, he stole 35 bases in limited action. I think it projects well over 50 bases over a full season. You know, even if he struggles with his approach, with contact, you know, he's going to probably play when he gets in, when the Reds are comfortable letting him play. and, you know, the power will come. Even if he's hitting 220, 230, he's going to hit for power. He will steal bases. He'll have a lot of value, even if that happens. But I really think that there's upside here pretty quickly for over 250 average, with well over 20 home runs and a boatload of stolen bases. And early projections are honestly probably a little pessimistic, but he does compare similarly to what we saw from like Bobby Witt Jr. after his rookie season.
That's fair. Dylan, why don't you chime in here? What are your thoughts on Ellie De La Cruz and what, you know, Jesse was just discussing? I definitely agree. I went out and traded for him in a few different dynasty leagues this offseason, including my 30-team league, which is like my home league that probably gets my most attention. So I put my money where my mouth was there. I definitely agree with you. What are your thoughts on that, Dylan? Because I, to be honest, I would have gone Ellie if you hadn't picked him there. There was definitely a couple expletives that were shouted.
And before, I probably would have went Gunner. Before I didn't pick Seager. I probably would have went Gunner if James hadn't taken him ahead of me. So
yeah,
everyone's sniping. Me too, yeah. Everyone's sniping each other. So
I strongly considered him where I took Luis Robert too. Like, I think he's going to be that good. And people kind of forget, like, Ellie was on a 20:53 pace while, you know, dealing with the ups and downs of being a rookie and the, you know, the approach issues everyone likes to bring up. But then again, look at the, like, the contact rates. Are they great? No. But are they, like, downright terrible? Also, no. You know, like, I actually put up a tweet that people didn't like, but his contact rates, it was, I think I put up, like, zone contact, contact swinging strike, maybe one or two others, chase, whiff, whatever it was. It was, like, four or five of them compared to his rookie year, compared to Aaron Judge's 2022, they were pretty close. And I wasn't trying to compare the two. That's what people took it as, but it was to show that they weren't as bad as people were, like, were kind of saying they were. So, like, yeah, he's got something to work on, but the upside is 35 plus, 50 plus in arguably the best hitter's park in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, go look at Bobby Witt Jr.'s rookie year. It's so similar. The data is so similar.
We are big Ellie fans, so totally agree. I think the biggest thing is the chase rate. Just get that down. That's probably the bigger differentiator between him and Judge is just zone miss versus, you know, expanding the zone and missing as well, getting fooled on breaking ball, stuff like that. But Dylan, I want to kick it over to you. I was trying to. We all chimed in to talk to you.
The floor That's is okay.
Talk a little bit about your team. And like I said, if you want to chime in on Ellie, you can. We've talked a little bit about him already.
Yeah, I mean, Ellie, obviously, I'll just quickly talk about Ellie. Ceiling sky high, of course. I think I was actually surprised, Eric, that you didn't take him in the second round. I actually wrote him in the spreadsheet, assuming you were going to take him there.
And I sat there for a good 5 minutes, just like on the fence. Gunner was also in play there. I'm like, it was such a tough decision between Robert, Gunner, and Ellie. But yeah, I was very close to doing so, Dylan.
And so, like, maybe the second round is early, but you're not going to get him in the third. So he's not going to make it to 30, whatever it is, 33 on the way back. So it's not early at all. Like, it's in the right spot. So maybe he won't be incredible this year, but there's a, you know, reasonable chance that he will. Maybe he will be Bobby Witt that we saw last year. So love that pick. The way I start dynasties is I like to keep my options open. And then somewhere around, you know, somewhere in the 5th to 10th, I like ultimately most of the time just decide to go for it. Because as you know, as you've been making jokes, I kind of track it as it goes with projections just to see how it's going. And then I start seeing like opportunities and then I just can't resist. And I hate when I see my team dropping in the rankings as every picks are made. I'm like, oh, this is bad. I started Young, Tucker, Vlad, Junior Caminero in the third, which kind of made me think maybe I'm going to be rebuilding because, you know, he's not maybe going to be a 30 home run guy this year, of course. I wanted Bo Bichette in the fourth, and Jeff, you sniped me there. Not happy about that. So I went with Pablo Lopez. Kind of, he's a pitcher I like a lot this year, and you know, he's relatively young compared to, you know, other guys like Luis Castillo type of thing. And then I went Adley, I think, and I won't get into it later. I don't want to spoil, but at some point I changed gears and just decided to go for it. So yeah, you know, kind of stay young. Guys who will contribute this year and contribute in multiple years. Don't sacrifice one for the other too much yet. And then, you know, look for gaps or look for opportunities in how the board has fallen.
My team is very old hitting and young pitching by and large. But to be honest, this is probably what one of my redraft teams would have looked like. 12 team, I just figured it was shallow enough. I could just go down the board, take my guys, and find some prospects toward the end, some younger players as backups, etc. You know, I think some of it was, like, if this was a 15-team league, I probably would have played it a little bit differently. But that being said, like, some of the older guys that I did take, like, I just like the value generally in all formats this year on Trout. I think, like, if he's going sixth round, like, I'm kind of okay, especially in an OBP format, taking the hit there and seeing what happens, because he's such a differentiator in OBP formats for sure. So he gets a bump up there. I didn't get my hands on Yandy Diaz. He's another guy that's a little bit older, but I'm confident in. I tend to like older corner guys overall. I know it's, it flies in the face of Trout, but like with Freeman and some of these other guys, they can move to DH. They're in good environments. They're in great lineups. You know, obviously, like, huge run production. I don't expect Freddie Freeman to steal 20 bases again, but I guess you never know with these new rules, right?
Freddie Freeman does whatever Freddie Freeman wants to do.
I doubled up on my Dodgers love right there, you know. So I was trying to do something interesting.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But we all do our own rankings. You know, all four of us, I know, Dylan and I kind of blend ours together to put them out, but we have individual rankings as well. I'm going to go backwards now. I'm going to go back to Dylan. How much did you stick to your individual rankings versus the group ranking? Because I know for myself, I kind of stick with our blend because I think it gives us at least me a good balance of like the guys that I'm really high on and those that like maybe I'm too high on, and it tempers those expectations and kind of blends in some of the data and obviously projections, et cetera, that you lean on. So were you sticking to like your own personal Dylan projections? Were you using the blend? And then I'll talk to obviously Eric and Jesse about this. And I'm going to pull the screen off now too. So a bunch of talking heads.
I used the blend to start. I had that set up because I want to know who you would like to, since we're sitting beside each other in the draft room, so to speak. So I didn't use my personal ranks. Funny thing, to show how seriously I take these things, I had our list, and then I said, it's a 12-team league. You know, we have to take five prospects, so that's 60. So I went down and found the 61st prospect, and I grayed out everyone below that. Did the same thing, like it's one catcher league. So like, who's a 13th catcher? Gray those out. And then, so I have like what the player pool is for the draft. That's what I did. I kind of recommend doing something similar, maybe not that to that much detail, but obviously we've talked about it last week with James. Know your format, know your league. It's very important. The 13th catcher in this league is worthless because we only need one catcher on 12 teams. So, you know, stuff like that, obvious things like that. And then another thing is our Dynasty 700, and this is where I kind of made the move. Our relief pitchers are a bit lower than you would have in a 12-team league or a 10-team league or an 8-team league because it's kind of, we're trying to find that blend. And because of relief pitchers not having longevity, really, you know, we account for that in the rankings, having them low. But in a 12-team league, you know, I jumped and I grabbed Edwin Diaz in the 8th, and that's well above our quote-unquote ADP based on our rankings, and closer run ensued after that. And if you look at that, that's the biggest gap on our Dynasty 700 ranking list, is the relief pitchers were pushed way up. So it's, you know, speaks again to the knowing your league and knowing your format.
Well, you also started the reliever run. Went out there, you took Edwin Diaz, and like it was just like all heck broke loose. And all of a sudden, I'm in the midst of it, and I'm like, I'm going to have to take a reliever soon. So I did. And like you said, I jumped ADP way higher than I, or not ADP, but our ranking way higher than I would have. Jesse, I'm going to go back over to you. Obviously, you have your Dynasty rankings over at Baseball Prospectus. Are you sticking with those? And I think we'll get into this later. I'm always interested, is there a point where you start to deviate? Because I feel like within that top 25, I'm pretty chalk as to like what I want to do. But it hits a certain point where I'm more like groupings, and like depending upon what you need, you got to go a different direction. So how do you navigate it when you're using your rankings in the startup?
Yeah, I mean, I generally use my rankings for a little while at the very least. My rankings at BP that are public facing are for average based formats. I do have my own OBP rankings, but they're not final. They're not ready for publication, for example. I do kind of go by my OBP rankings with the average rankings as a loose guide. You know, there is a substantial difference in player value between average and OBP for many players. A lot of players are fairly static. You know, some people who have like, you know, 70 to 80 point differential between average and OBP typically don't really move at all between average and OBP at all. You know, and then high average hitters like Freddie Freeman, they actually don't really receive an OBP boost at all either, generally. And I think if you look at auction calculator, that kind of on Fangraphs, they do a pretty good job of kind of showing you that value difference. So what I recommend for everybody, if you're doing a draft, a startup draft, and you have unique league settings, input that into something like the auction calculator to get a sense of where player valuations vary, because it's going to be different depending on your league. For example, in a shallower league, like a 12-team league, like Dylan said, if there's a one catcher league, all catcher values drop because there's just a lot, the replacement value is so much better. So, you know, those little things, they will influence rankings throughout. For me, tiers start to get larger after about 100 players deep. And they get really large at around 200 players deep. So, you know, there, you could just, at that point, it's sort of just, what is your team need? What's your build looking like? Are you trying to win now? Are you trying to, you know, focus on players who are going to maintain value over a period of time? It will change how you draft. And typically in a league like this too, where we only have to draft five prospects, it's a shallower league. And I know a lot of us are fairly confident on identifying prospects through waivers and free agency. In startups, I typically wait to draft prospects. And I think a lot of us probably do as well. And as such, you're going to see prospects fall fairly far as well in this mock draft. So you got to just read the room in a lot of ways too, see how people are drafting around you, and you can kind of change your strategy based on that and try and capture falling value better.
And we'll talk a little bit about prospect strategy toward the end of the show. But Eric, sort of the same question, of course, you're a guy that does rankings, has for a long time. You know, how do you approach, you know, different startups with your rankings? How much are you sticking to them? How much are you deviating?
Yeah, it's always interesting in, you know, whether it's a real draft or mock draft like this, when it's people, like, how many drafts have we all done together, whether it's real or mock at this point, like a lot of them, right, over the years. So, you know, knowing the room absolutely is key. But I'm kind of roughly where you were saying, Jeff, where, you know, first like few rounds, first 25, 30, 40 picks, something like that, I'll stick pretty close to my rankings, because at that point, it's not like, you know, I'm not going to get Luis Robert in the next round for the most part. Like, those guys, they're not going to fall a full, you know, round and a half, whatever it might be, to your next pick. So then it kind of, you know, if you don't go with your own rank and someone's like, well, you have so-and-so ranked ahead of so-and-so, but you went with that guy, you know, it can lead to some questions about your own ranking. So I kind of say pretty chalk the first, you know, maybe even up towards closer to 50. But after that, definitely you got to, I go read the room more than in the first couple of rounds, because, you know, so when you get deeper past 100, past 150, as Jesse mentioned, the tiers get bigger, and there's that better chance that the guy that you might be higher on falls to the next round than it would be in the early rounds. Like, just off the top of my head, a prospect that I know I'm higher on the most, Jeff, I know you're with me on this one, Chase DeLauder. I have him ranked super high, but I know most other people still have him ranked high. I could probably wait to draft a guy like DeLauder a few rounds later. So
I do try to right now, Eric.
Oh, you are on the clock. don't be taking my boy Chase. All right, leave Chase for Jeff or I to take. But yeah, no, I do. Like I said, you know, finish what I was saying. The you know, as the draft goes on, I try to. I know the guys for the most part that I'm higher on than, you know, Jeff, James, Jesse, etc. So I do tend to be like, all right, I'll wait a little bit because I know I can get that guy a couple rounds later, and I'll go after another position that I need that I know this guy isn't going to last another couple rounds. So yeah, you definitely deviate further and further, you know, just knowing the room and further along in the draft.
I'm going to throw a curveball here just because it was something interesting that you said. Do you guys ever when you're going into a draft, a startup, for example, and it's a real draft, we'll say however deep, 20 teams, and you're in there with people who you might know make rankings, others where you may not necessarily know who they're reading consistently or who they follow. Do you go out there? I subscribe to like a million different services, so I have access to like everybody's rankings. And when I do that, like I will accumulate like everybody's rankings into a spreadsheet versus mine, look at differentials, like, you know, the differential in rank, and then also kind of come up with a cumulative sort of ADP sort of based off of that at times. I didn't do that for this one because it was a mock and I kind of was just, you know, didn't need to. I was just looking at my own rankings versus the draft room or whatever and, you know, sort of cross-referencing that with some VLOOKUP action. But yeah, no, I mean, I definitely try to pull in other people's rankings and get an idea of consensus. Because like in my 30 team, you know, long time dynasty league, we just finished our FYPD and it goes 300 picks deep. And there's certain players where like, I know they're reading Eric, or I know they're reading Chris Clegg or Jesse or James Anderson, you know, and it's pretty clear, like, all right, I can look at James's, like, you know, whatever, link up with his rankings and be like, all right, this is where so-and-so is going to go next round. It's going to be one of these three guys. And quite often that's kind of the case. So I think it's something that if you're a consumer of content too, you can do that. Cause I'm sure a lot of you that are out there are subscribing to multiple different sites and services, et cetera. You can accumulate that in your own spreadsheets and Google Sheets and, you know, figure all that stuff out.
I think that's a great strategy. I 100% recommend that. And I think it's particularly interesting when you're in these leagues with these people and sending offers to James Anderson that you know he's going to accept because you know he ranks one player way ahead of the other one. So you know it's like a lock. And I know he does that too, to all of us. And I think the thing that really tickles and irks me the most is these leagues where they're co-managers or co-rankers in real life with you and with Jeff and Dylan. I can't get a clear read on you, Jeff, in our leagues. I can't get a clear read on who you value because you combine your rankings with Dylan. But yeah, co-managers. I know that James is co-managing with Eno Saris in Devil's Rejects, and he keeps rejecting a trade that I've been sending him and adding to my side. He keeps rejecting it. It's Will Benson, who I know he loves, and I have. And he keeps rejecting it, and it's ticking me off. It's probably Eno. Eno is the one who's doing it all.
There you go. Dylan, I want to talk to you a little bit about that in terms of you obviously do a variety of different drafts. How much of trying to sort of read the room ahead of time and have an idea of like what type of players your opponents like, et cetera, is something that goes into it for you? I'm sure that there's times you obviously can't figure that out, but you know, you obviously are the reigning main co-manager main event winner. So,
I mean, it's huge. You're trying to find every edge you can get in fantasy. Every little advantage you can get is going to be helpful because the floor of fantasy players is so high now. There's so much content. There's so much great content. Things that were like maybe something that you thought you knew that no one else knew, like everyone knows that now, type of thing. And so it's very hard to find any edges or any margin. So anytime you can, if you know that someone uses a certain set of rankings, you gotta, it's not take advantage. I mean, they like those rankings. You're not cheating, but you know, you take advantage to see how that fits your build and your roster and your strategy. So if you know your opponent's tendencies and you know how they rank people, you can, you know, optimize accordingly. So definitely huge for me. I mean, I co-manage an FBC team with Jordan Rosenblum as well. So I know his tendencies. I know he's very projection based. I know, like, you know, we share a lot of similar players that we like. I kind of know how the draft's going to go. I made a joke earlier in this draft. I'm like, hey, you're up. So I assume you're taking Rodon and DeGrom. And he ended up taking Rodon. And I can't remember who the other one was. It wasn't DeGrom at that point. But it's like, if you know the tendencies, it can kind of help, you know, shape the way you play the game.
I'm surprised Jordan will do NFBC leagues just because there's no trading in NFBC. Because we all know Jordan loves him a good trade and many of them.
I traded him Carlos Rodon this year. There you go.
Yes. Shout out to Jordan in Finland right now. It's what, 2:30, almost 3 o'clock, and 3 o'clock in the morning, right?
Something like that.
Something like that. So, you know, I'm sure he's getting his Z's in right now, or sending trade offers in Highlander. That's possible.
Do you think he ever dreams about sending trade offers?
Oh yeah,
probably.
Dylan, weigh in on that one. You probably have some insight. Has he ever talked about like subconscious trade offers, dreams, night trades, almost like night?
I don't want to violate the co-managing privilege that we have. They're revealing too much.
So, I want to go into our sort of final topic here. I think this is interesting because it's going to depend, obviously, upon the size of the league. So let's forget about the mock here for a second, where it's 12 teams and it's 30 rounds in a 20-team league startup draft, where let's say, you know, there's a minor league setup, there's some incentive with prospects to, you know, call them up. What's your prospect strategy like, Eric, in a league like that? 20 teams, you know, let's say there's 400, 500 prospects rostered, you know, after the draft is all done and the dust is settled. You're going to attack it differently than you are in a 12 team league, but in a league like that, where prospect capital is probably a little bit more valuable, when are you going to start to go after some of those top talents and some of those back end of the 100 guys? Where do those guys end up falling sort of in your strategy?
Yeah, no, it's definitely different the deeper you get, because obviously you can take a lot more risks when you're in a shallow league, because, you know, the replacement value is so much higher, obviously. But I've always tried to, you know, my analogy always is, you look at the movie Shrek, when he says onions have layers. I like to say prospects have layers, at least on my team. I like to layer my prospects in a way where I always have, you know, I have some that are contributing right now, like your Colt Keith types, your Jackson Chirio types, guys that are going to impact me right away. And then I'll have some other guys that are maybe, you know, later this year, you know, Jackson Job types that are impact me soon. And then you mix in, you know, I'll sprinkle in the guys like Joendry Vargas and Sebastian Walcott that are, you know, a couple years down the road. But I think that's important to have too, because, you know, once, you know, and if you do it right, you know, once you're close to ready, guys are coming up contributing for you, you know, those guys like Walcott, Vargas, etc., they're getting closer, and then they become that next group that come up for you. And then you can, you know, if you have confidence in your own ability to, you know, find prospects, and especially those deeper, you know, guys like the DSL pop-ups and guys like that, then you can still kind of replenish that last layer of your prospect system. So that's always kind of been the way I go about it. But yeah, it's definitely, you know, getting that prospect capital, especially when you have a deeper prospect pool, you know, having at least some, you know, good core there, I think is crucial, whether it's for the reason of you're, all right, I'm just going to get these guys that are come up and help me, or you're using them as trade capital, right? Because obviously prospects really have two different, you know, paths, so to speak, in fantasy. Again, you can use them for your own team, or you can use them to go trade and get that piece. It can be a throw in or whatever to get that win now piece that you need. So I think always having some sort of prospect core that you can use is pretty crucial.
And same question over to you, Jesse. You know, a 20 team league where there's a lot more prospects rostered, you know, how early are you going after some of the top guys? I'll throw the same over to Dylan, and then we'll talk a little bit about the prospects that were taken in the 12 team and what the order was.
Yeah, I think it really depends on how I'm attacking the draft. I think if I'm trying to build a team that's designed to win soonish, I'm probably not going prospects for a long time. And I am completely comfortable waiting on prospects in startup drafts because I feel very confident in identifying them on waivers. And I think if you're subscribing to Baseball America and to our websites, you should also feel that kind of confidence. I don't think you have to draft prospects early, but of course, you know, if the value is just too good to pass up, I will take a prospect regardless of where it is in the draft. You know, if someone like Jackson Chirio falls to like 50, I mean, I'm not going to let him fall farther if that's where I'm picking at. You know, it's really about where the value is and how good it is, because, you know, I really do place a lot of value on winning very quickly. And because for one, dynasty leagues are not at all guaranteed to last. Even what those that are built for that purpose, something so a league like Highlander, which has a lot of rules in place to try and allow that league to last, create parity. And I'll just give a one more plug to Highlander and leagues like it. You should use poacher drafts in dynasty leagues. Poacher drafts are fantastic ways to kind of create enforced parity, create off-season activity in trading, you know, well ahead of like a preseason draft. It gives teams that are trying to rebuild a quicker avenue to do it rather than having to rely exclusively on like a first-year player draft. And I just think it's just more fun. It's still a dynasty league by all intents and purposes. I wouldn't even consider, you know, adding a poacher draft doesn't turn it into like a keeper league or a dynasty hybrid. I think it's still a dynasty league, but I'd recommend it. But that's off topic here. I think generally with prospects in Highlander, for example, I did not draft any prospects until the last like five rounds, something like that. I just didn't. And I just don't see the point generally. But again, if the value is right, I will totally draft prospects.
Yeah. There were players that in a more standard format, I obviously would have protected, that I didn't, because I just sort of felt like you're better off trying to like go for it, and you're only going to have so many players you can keep. I had enough prospects that were coming up and young players that I knew I would acquire, you know, throughout the draft. And yeah, I don't think I drafted a prospect until this most recent round when I took Colt Emerson. And for a good chunk of my team at this point is kind of already built, and it's just a matter of filling in some other pieces. I don't think I'm going to compete this year, but it's going to be better than being at the bottom.
Yeah.
I think
Yeah, I think 30 team leagues, for example, where you are having a boatload of prospects rostered are super fun and fascinating. If you can find 30 players that are dedicated to fill out a 30 team league, they're great. I'd recommend them. I'm in only one, and it's a lot of fun. It really forces you to dig really deep to try and find prospects and get in on them early. I mean, we already are doing that, but I think it just provides a little bit more incentive to do it. And I those leagues, again, you know, I really do like just waiting.
Yeah. They're a lot of fun, but Dylan, same to you. I know you're another guy that, use prospects very much. I know you say this a lot in our shows, as currency, as trade currency, to go out there and acquire more pieces. So you're always sort of flipping, going out and getting them. That's, I'm sure, one of the reasons, the genesis of RoboScout was going out and trying to find those unheralded players. So how are you approaching in a deeper draft, a 20 team league? How would you approach the prospect side of things?
Yeah, I think my default is kind of like the way Jesse was saying, like I'm confident in my ability to get prospects. So I will, you know, not worry too much about, you know, making the right choices, because I know, you know, and in the future, I'll be able to kind of make up for it. That's what I think. That doesn't mean I just eschew prospects at all, like totally. Like I was thinking about this as I took Caminero in the third round, and I was worried as we were going through the draft that like, was that a big mistake? And like, is that going to hurt me moving forward? And I said, well, what if I swapped that for Manny Machado, who Matt Eddy took in the sixth round? And my projection goes up substantially. So I guess what I'm trying to say is like, you may take Caminero, you may take a prospect and think that, you know, it's not helping your chances this year, but of course you can flip it. Like you said, it's currency. I can trade Caminero for Manny Machado possibly and maybe win the league. So you don't want to just leave prospects to the end and then, you know, backfill. You want to have guys at their value. Like Jesse was saying with Jackson Churio, yeah, sure. You know, you can't let him fall because you want someone who the league is going to value. So you kind of have to weigh as well. You have to kind of weigh the perceived value, and who you think may get helium, and who you are maybe souring on, but people still like. You got to always kind of understand the market for the players you have, or the players in the league, and kind of, you know, buy low, sell high kind of idea. So, you know, I default to not worrying too much about prospects, but I'm always considering what their value is from the player pool.
And I threw the top 11 picks into the chat here, so you can take a look at what they are. There's a little note there with like Yamamoto as to whether you want to consider him a prospect or not. Some leagues would, some leagues don't. Really kind of depends on the setup and the rules in your league. But I think it puts into perspective, you look at the top prospects who go here. Really, I would say the only guy who's probably not going to contribute this year at the major league level is either Skeens or with 11 Job. Cruz, obviously, maybe there's some questions there as well. But overall, it's pretty close to the majors prospects. And even with the guys that, you know, maybe you don't see a significant amount of work at the major league level this year, there will be players who are going to see close to a full season of work in 2025. So you're not waiting all that long, obviously, with players like that. And there's certainly upside that, you know, Skeens or Job blows through expectations, Cruz runs through expectations, and all of a sudden they're in the major leagues in June or July. Prospects are coming up much earlier than they used to, and the numbers are backing it up. And then the prospect incentive has only pushed that even further because there's not an incentive to keep these guys in the minor leagues any longer. So I think that's, you know, an interesting component of it. We don't have to go through, you know, the entire rundown of, you know, all 29 prospects taken. Were there any ones that you were sort of surprised by within this 29 that they were one of the earlier prospects to go? I know we have Parker Meadows considered a prospect here. He went 22nd to Shelley, 197 overall. That's kind of in line with where Meadows is going in a lot of startups at this point. It's because he probably is going to be the leadoff hitter and the center fielder for the Tigers this year.
Yeah, no, I thought that was solid value on Parker Meadows. He said leadoff, he's going to be hitting in front of, you know, some pretty good hitters at the top of half of the lineup. Could be pretty solid. And he's shown that 2020 upside. Like, I've been scooping him up in redraft everywhere I can because his ADP was like, you know, 300. I think it's pushed up a little bit, like 275 or so now. But I think that's still great value. But, you know, honestly, there wasn't a ton of big surprises here. I mean, it's pretty, I won't say chalk, but there wasn't anybody that was picked super early that I was like, oh, wow, that was really high. Or it maybe might have been high in for my own rankings, but I know that person that took that player is much higher. Like, this first one pops in my mind. I know James is insanely high in Xavier Isaac, and he got that one right. He was kind of high on him when not many others were last year after the draft. So I am kind of surprised that, you know, maybe that James Wood fell as far as he did. He fell to 220. I thought maybe he'd go 50 picks earlier than that. But outside of that, I think it was actually pretty chalking. But I guess the one thing I will say, I am maybe surprised that Langford and Holiday didn't actually go a little higher, like maybe inside the top 20 or so, because I've seen them go that high in other drafts that we've done, whether it be real or mock drafts. So, you know, maybe the overall numbers for some of these guys were a little low, but the order, you know, not really that surprising.
How about for you, Jesse? Any surprises, anyone that jumped out to you? The one that jumped out to me was that Jet Williams went above Walker Jenkins, but at the same time, I think in an LBP league, there's probably a case for it. He's a little bit closer. But Jenkins for me all day on that one.
Yeah, I thought that Jet was a bit high as well. I thought both Imanaga and Young Ho Lee, which I know Ross is very high on both of them, I thought they're both way too high in this type of format. In a 12-team format, neither of them really have the type of upside you should be chasing that high in my mind. I really love Imanaga too. You know, I rank him just outside my top 200 for like a 15-team league. So I do really like him. But in a 12-team league, I wouldn't take him probably in the top 250 just because of his profile. You know, you're going to hear a lot of people say he's like a 4 or 5 starter. And yeah, that may be what he profiles a little bit as a major leaguer. But I think there's a lot more upside there than what's typical for his type of arm. I mean, I kind of feel like he's Nestor Cortez with even maybe a little more upside. And Nestor Cortez had obviously a fantastic 2022. And, you know, if Imanaga did something like that, would that really surprise a lot of people? I mean, it wouldn't for me, to be honest. I really do think he's really good. So I don't know why I'm necessarily bashing these picks, because I have obviously like Imanaga, but I do think it's a little early for him. But yeah, Lee, for example, I just don't think there's going to be a lot of fantasy impact in terms of, he's basically Luis Arraez 2.0 in a lot of ways. He puts everything on the ground, near 60% ground ball rate in the KBO last year. he's always put everything on the ground throughout his career. You know, his home park's not going to do him any favors in terms of over the fence power. I don't think he's going to hit 10 home runs. I don't think he's going to steal 10 bases. He's only stolen, like, what, 10 total in the last 2 years. I just don't think he's going to provide power or speed. He'll give you average, but I also question what type of OBP boost he's going to receive, because, you know, obviously Luis Arraez, he plays down in OBP formats just because he's a high average player. High average players, they play down OBP. I think Lee gets dinged in OBP. So I don't even know if he's necessarily going to be Stephen Kwan type of production, which is where I'm a little concerned. I would not take Lee this high in a 12 teamer at this league size. In a deeper format, these players are fantastic. I love them. But in shallower formats, the impact is just not high enough for me to try and take this early.
What are your thoughts on that, Dylan, when it comes to Lee? I've kind of been sort of on that side of things where, yeah, it's a plug and play major leaguer kind of in some FYPDs outside the top 10. So I see the value there, especially if you are competing, et cetera. You know, they're outfielder. Outfielders are always in demand in 5 outfielder leagues that are a little bit deeper. But he's not super exciting. And certainly, you know, there's a big difference between if he had, you know, it was in Cincinnati, for example. We talked about that with LED earlier. Eric had brought it up versus playing in San Francisco as sort of a gap to gap guy.
I like Jung-Hoo Lee. I mean, I like Stephen Kwan, and it's funny because Ross also took Stephen Kwan. High WRC plus guys. I mean, the Giants said he's going to lead off basically. So, I mean, he's going to get some counting stats theoretically. These guys are typically undervalued. Like Stephen Kwan, I can't remember the exact number, but in 15 team leagues, not last year, but the year before, he was the 15th best outfielder in a batting average league. Like he added that much value. And Arraez adds positive value too. And I know that, I mean, everything Jesse said makes sense. If you're not going to get home runs, not going to get stolen bases, you know, you have to hit with the bat, and, you know, it kind of puts your roster in a bad spot because you have to make up for it. But I like it. I kind of think there's a bit of a market inefficiency there. I also agree with Jesse about Imanaga. If you look at the bat really does not like the Yamamoto, Imanaga, even Jung-Hoo Lee. And it really dings Imanaga on the projection. So if you go to ATC, which I think uses the bat as well, Imanaga doesn't project well. But if you go just to Steamer and Zips, both of them have him projected to be like Justin Steele, like a 1.2 whip and, you know, just around 4.0 ERA. Like, I think there is some sneaky value there with Imanaga, especially if you're in a win now in an FYPD. You know, I would take him probably over Jung-Hoo Lee, to be honest, just because I think the impact will be more for this year.
I think both their values are really nice in redraft. They're very nice values in redraft. I would totally like smash the draft button at their current ADPs.
And I think for this draft in general, I think we all kind of pushed prospects down.
Yeah,
I had like James Wood was on my list for a while. He was at the top, and Tiedemann was at the top for a while. Yes. And Painter was too. And I just like, I guess I kept chasing the projections. So I like, oh, wait, one more round. It just kept going down. I think it's because we're all good at prospect hunting. And so we can wait. I think that's sort of the sentiment. But it's just funny. I remember, like, I should take James Wood here. I should take Tiedemann here. I'm like, I can't. Jeff will pass me in the projections.
I was totally ready to take Tiedemann and then realized that you'd taken him like 2 rounds ago. And the funny thing is, like, I had sat on that for probably 4 rounds. And at one point I was like, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to see where he goes. I'm going to see who else takes him and how far he falls beyond where I would take him with my goofy Ricky Tiedemann value. But anyway, Eric, any final thoughts here as we sort of wrap up the show in terms of, you know, this season, stuff you're working on, and, you know, maybe things you're seeing out there in the wild in your own drafts, your own leagues?
Man, I'm in like 8 different drafts right now between DCs and a couple basketballs, another dynasty mock draft with the folks over at Roto World. So a lot of drafts right now. And it's fun though. I love doing mock drafts, and yeah, you can get tired of them. When I get to March, you know, mid to late March, I'm like, all right, I'm just done with mock drafts. But I do get enjoyment out of these. I do find them valuable because it's a way to, you know, test your own rankings, try different strategies, because obviously we're always like, I think it was Dylan, like, looking for that edge any way you can get it, especially where you're in a league, you know, like Highlander, you know, in other leagues that we're in with so many sharp minds. Like, you have to be on top of your game. So even if it takes a mock draft to try out a strategy that you maybe even think, oh, what if I try this? Or, you know, where does this player fall? So I get value out of these to try to hone my own rankings, put those up to the test, and just to better myself as a player. So it's always fun to do these, for sure.
Absolutely. Jesse, any sort of final thoughts? What sort of stuff are you working over in Baseball Prospectus?
Yeah, we're churning through the positional series at Baseball Prospectus. I know you all already are done yours at Baseball America, but we always start ours after January 15th. I want to get it done earlier because it's really tough timeline here. Try and get it all done and then try and cover spring, early spring information. But yeah, we're doing that. We released our 101, our Dynasty 101 earlier this week. I released my top 112 first year player draft rankings last week, even though it was a little late. I wanted to release it like on January 16th or 17th, but you know how it is. Time got the best of me. So a lot of work coming out, and I obviously prepping for drafts. I'm excited to go down to First Pitch Florida, see you all. That'll be fun. Dylan, are you getting down there?
Boo. I'm not.
Boo you. You should get down there sometime. You'd be welcome, 100%. I'm sure you get into one of those labor drafts and use all your spreadsheets and destroy us all. But I'm excited. I'm excited about that. That'll be fun. I'm excited for labor, that AL labor. I finished second last year to Jason Collette, and I hope to take it down this year.
Yeah, I finished dead last year in NL labor. I was terrible. It was awful. I got hit with so many injuries like right off the bat, and then there's just not a whole lot in the waiver wire to go after in those leagues. So that was tough. It was like me and Derek Carty battling out for last. So I felt at least kind of like comfortable with the fact that Derek Carty, who was a seasoned veteran who had won that league, was also having a bad year. So I don't know. I guess like don't bid $15 on Brendan Donovan this year, Jeff. You'll be in better shape. Or bid up on Corbin Carroll. I was like in on him and then like just pulled the plug the last minute, like at $23 or $24, and I should have kept going.
Well, hey, I bought Jacob DeGrom, so that could happen. I still finished second, but you know.
So it didn't happen. Yeah. No, it was a lot more than just one pick with me. It's like my entire team is terrible. But
it happens, and that's why Dynasty is beautiful. You can have a rough season, and you can pivot very easily and still get a lot of value and enjoyment out of your season rather than having to try and claw your way out of the bottom in redraft.
I will hopefully be back in a better position this year, but we'll see. There you go. You know, got to go through the NL player pool. Dylan, any closing thoughts before we wrap this sucker up?
No, just really thankful you guys are in this mock. I love the mocks too, Eric. Like you said, it's like we're in the 20th round and you just get a good sense of who the player value is. Like Max Scherzer hasn't been taken. Byron Buxton hasn't been taken. I'm just picking two guys that were in my queue at one point. So you just kind of get a sense for your, like the real leagues that you're in, like what the market is on these guys. And then when we publish this, you know, this will also move the market a bit because we'll see all these expert minds and where they're taking people and how they pick their rosters and who's valued a lot and who's not. And I have my FYPDs and my two big dynasty leagues coming up next week. So I'm kind of prepping for that. Not really prepping, just getting ready for it. And then, working on tweaking RoboScout, trying to get it even better than it was last year. I wasn't as happy as in previous years. I just want to be a bit better on that. We talked about that offline. And then, working on prepping for NFBC. Still haven't decided if I'm coming back in, but I think I will.
I will note that I love the RoboScout that incorporates data. Love it.
Appreciate that.
I love that. But I am on the clock. I guess we should end with this. My pick. I'm taking Chase. No, I'm just. I'm not taking Chase Alonor. I will take a prospect because why not? My first prospect, I will take Colson Montgomery.
There you go. That was one that was in my queue for quite a while.
who is very nice in OBP formats, in my mind. I think he projects quite well. And of course, Eric, or of course, James just selected right before Eric, right after me, and he took Chase DeLauder.
Are you, and I'm on the clock, man. I had to pivot. I was fully going to take Chase DeLauder there. So thank you for that, James Anderson.
Well, I think that means that I'm now on the clock. So I'm going to go into the draft room now and make my pick, and we're going to wrap up here. But I want to thank Jesse Roach of Baseball Prospectus, Eric Cross of Roto Baller and FTN Fantasy, of course, my co-host Dylan White, all of you out there that tuned in and watched, all of our subscribers, of course, and check Baseball America. We've got all of our fantasy rankings up there, all our positional rankings. We have our top 700 up. We have a couple different top 100s for fantasy. We did our just straight one last week. And then this week, Dylan released his Robo Scout top 100, which is the model-based one, which is really interesting. So go check all that out. A lot of content out there. And happy drafting. Thanks for tuning in, guys.